welcome to the NC Students Podcast. NC Students is the middle school and high school ministry of Northland Cathedral in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information on NC Students and Northland Cathedral, please visit www.northlandcathedral.org. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy this week's message.
Away, because I have a little bit of an example I want to, like an illustration I want to do with you guys. But first, if you will open up to Romans 1, please. Romans numero uno. So what we're talking about tonight, we're starting a series of Own It. Jerome just said that. It's going to be 5 weeks. Where'd he go? It's going to be 4 weeks. The fifth week is going to do something with a chair. But it's going to be 4 weeks with, I think, a fifth week. Nope, it's just going to be 4 weeks. I read the text wrong. He changed his mind. I didn't read the text wrong. So it's on Own It. That's fine. So we're going to read Romans 1, 16 and 17. But tonight we're going to talk about owning it in the aspect of owning our faith. So I look at this when Jerome sent me this text and he asked me to speak tonight, and I looked at all the series titles. I realized that if it's not for this, if we don't start with this ground piece tonight, the rest of the series really isn't going to come together and really isn't going to make sense. Now, I want to preface what I'm going to talk about tonight with the fact of I also look at this, look at faith, kind of like we're putting on our big boy pants or big girl pants, whatever. And when we put on our big boy pants, you know, sometimes some of us are a little, like the pants aren't quite as high as the other person, and so, or as somebody else. So, you know, if your pants are down here, like around your knees, and you try to walk, you're going to fall over sometimes. And I want to preface this by saying our faith, when we're walking out this faith, sometimes we're going to be walking with our pants around our knees. Don't actually walk around with your pants around your knees, guys. Nathan? But sometimes we're going to be walking around, with our pants around our knees, and we're going to fall sometimes. But the most important thing is that we keep trying to pull the pants up. It was a very weird illustration, but you will remember it, because I'm going to remember it. But we got to keep pulling our pants up so that way they can be all the way around our waist, and we're walking normal, and we're walking with Christ, and we're walking with His strength and things like that. But let's go to Romans 1, 16 and 17. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith. As it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. All right. When I first started coming to this youth group, what was it, 10 years ago, Jerome? It was about 10 years ago. I knew nothing about my faith. I knew nothing about the Word of God. I was fresh. I was scratch. I was a baseball player. Still wish I was a baseball player, but I'm not. And I remember one of the first nights I ever came, Jerome pulled me aside. He didn't have a real bat like this. He had a plastic bat. And he played this little game with me. You want to play the game again? You get to swing the bat. This is a great idea. Let's do it. Does anybody else want to try it? No, you're not going to try it. I'm going to do one more thing. So Jerome and I have known each other for 10 years. I wasn't nervous at all. I wasn't nervous at all to do that. Can I want to introduce you guys to something. Kyle? What? No, that night, the first night I did it, it was a plastic bat, but I was less nervous. I want to introduce you guys to something. This is my friend Kyle. This is actually my roommate. What? To someone. You're not something. You're someone. You want to come up here? All right. Guys, say hi to Kyle. This is my roommate.
Can I pull up my pants?
Wear your big boy pants. So Kyle wants to go into ministry as well. He's actually working on his master's in ministry and divinity. Yeah. So he actually helped serve at an awesome little church called The Grove. He's doing some amazing things there. I've been there a few times, and every time I talk to people at that church, all they have to say is good things about Kyle, his heart for the Lord, his heart for church planting. So if any of you guys have a desire to church plant, you should find him after service, because he has a real passion for that, and it's something that he wants to do for the rest of his life, I think. Right? Am I right? Yeah. So Kyle is a baseball player as well. I've known Kyle for about 4 months. So Kyle and I, our relationship's, you know, it's young, it's new, but I think are you going to trust me? Okay, I'll trust you. You trust me? All right, so you got to stand on this side. I'm not left-handed like Jerome. Give it up for Kyle. Give it up for Kyle. So, the reason I did that is because when I thought about that and I thought about this sermon topic, and I just think about my time that I've got to spend here or been able to spend here at North End Cathedral with Jerome, and I don't tell him this enough, but I really have, I'm not where I'm at today if it wasn't for him and if it wasn't for Heather. And if it wasn't for a lot of the leadership that we have here at North End Cathedral, Jerome really did take me under his wing. I mean, he swung a bat at me, but he took me under his wing. And we would play catch, and he would make sure that I didn't stink at life too much. But I really do appreciate what it is that he did for me. But when I was prepping for this sermon, when I was thinking about this sermon, I thought about that moment where he swung that bat, and I thought about just like how in a moment like that, a very short, quick moment, I put my faith in Jerome, Kyle put his faith in me, and he knew for without a shadow of a doubt, or I knew, and Kyle knew that I wasn't going to hit him. They let me swing full force, and to be honest with you, if you actually were to take a slow-mo video of that, Jerome was probably maybe this far away from me from ever even coming close to hitting me, and same for Kyle. It's all about technique, style, everything that you do. We can be 100% sure every time we swing that bat, we're never going to hit somebody. But that's faith for just a moment. My question tonight is, how do we not just have faith for a moment, but faith for a lifetime? I think that's faith for a lifetime. If we take that as an example and we look at that, how would we have faith to stand there for a lifetime and let somebody just swing like that for the rest of our life and have faith that they're never going to hit us? Because I don't want to have faith for just a moment. I don't want to be strong in a moment or for a period of time in my life and then give it all up. I want to be strong at all times in life. And that's where owning it comes into play. When we own our faith, we're pulling up our big boy pants. We're not walking with our pants around our legs anymore. We're not falling over. We're not tripping over as much. Because what we're saying is that this is a relationship between God and myself. This is nobody else's. This isn't my parents. This isn't my friends. This isn't my girlfriend. This isn't my boyfriend. This isn't anybody like that. What it is it's between you and it's between God. So we played this game over break, I guess break. We have to take paid time off. But we play this game called resistance, correct? Resistance. So resistance, there's two sides. You have the resistance, the good guys, and then the spies, the bad guys. The whole point of this game is to lie your face off. I actually don't think that's the point of the game, but I made it that way. So I'm a really good liar. I won once, lost another time. What? Anyways, the whole point of this game is to win at whatever cost. So that means lying. That means doing whatever you can, convincing the other team that you aren't the resistance or you aren't the spies, because everybody gets something at the beginning of the game. There's 5 rounds. It goes really fast. The only team, the only people that know who each player is the spies. You like close your eyes, they wake up, and they. Has anybody played Mafia? It's similar to Mafia, but it's not Mafia. It's actually way better than Mafia. But the whole point of this game is that you are trying to win at whatever cost. Whatever you can do, you try to win, and you try to make sure that either the spies are honestly the ones that are trying to make the resistance look bad. And it's really kind of hard. It's hard for the resistance because they don't know who's on their team. The spies do. And the spies are trying to kind of like, if you two were resistance, I'm going to try to make you hate each other. And I might. If you two are the resistance, I'm going to try to make you guys hate each other. We might want to talk afterwards. You guys make me nervous. Where was I going? You threw me off so much. So what you're trying to do is lie. You're just make yourself, see, as a spy, you're trying to make yourself honestly look like the resistance and make yourself not look like a spy. So you're lying. I was yelling at people. I was with Alex's family, so I probably should have been doing a lot better, but I was yelling at them. I was telling them to shut up. I was like, you're a spy! You're a spy! I was so into it, and I was lying the entire time. And the reason was because I said, I'm a spy. My job is to make sure that the resistance goes down. So I put everything I had into being a spy. Whatever I could do to make sure that the resistance lost, I did. So I even called Alex a liar like 25 times. I called Alex a liar so many times. I called her cousins liars. I think they still like me. Probably not. I don't know. We'll figure it out the next time I see them. But I did whatever I could. I was yelling. I was screaming. You know my high-pitched laugh that I get when I get excited? That was going on a lot. don't make me start laughing. You guys won't want to hear it. But I gave myself up to this, and as we were driving home, we played down in Arkansas. As we were driving home, I started thinking about this sermon. I started thinking about what owning it meant. I started thinking about people in wars past. People that are maybe in the military now for the United States, or it really doesn't matter, whatever country that you live in, people will give themselves up to a cause, will believe in something so much that they will give everything. They will give their life for that cause and for that belief. You know, I was just playing a game. I was joking around. I would do whatever I could to try to win. But there's so many times in life, if you look at war, if you look at the history of even, like World War II, World War I, people gave themselves to something that they believed in so much that they would listen to anybody and anything to make sure that that came about. And what's awesome about that game, that simple game that we played, is that I realized that that was a little bit of what faith is. So I started, in the last like month, I've started reading, has anybody heard of A Series of Unfortunate Events? Please tell me. Oh my gosh, thank goodness. So I got into this way later in life, like last month. I read like the first three. They're coming out with like a Netflix series, so I'm kind of geeking out a little bit. So I'm reading all the books. But I don't, I'm going to say this wrong, but the Baudelaire, is that right? Baudelaire? I should know how to say it. It's like French, and I'm French. Is it French? I don't know. It's French. But the Baudelaire children, that is hard to say. The faith that they have in each other is something that, I realize just how amazing these books are. If you really take them in, really take in what it is that they're saying, if you take in what they're saying, what the children are doing, the faith they have is unreal. I just finished, what is it, the sixth book. Actually, I probably read past that. But in the sixth book, I want to set this up for you. Sunny, Violet, and Klaus have all been pushed down. Klaus? Is it? Klaus. Klausenheimer. they've all been pushed down an elevator shaft. And now, what I like about this is that, well, first of all, it's a little bit kind of crazy. Sunny just climbed back up the elevator shaft with her two front teeth. That's literally impossible. But it's kind of cool. But when she comes back, so Sunny goes up, she's going to save her brother, or Klaus and Violet. She has to climb up. Then they're stuck in a net halfway through the elevator. And Sunny's going up. She's going to go find something so that way she can come back and save Violet and Klaus. But Klaus, while she's finding something, comes up with another idea and says that we're going to do this different. And so what Sunny actually has to do is, instead of going back down with her teeth, she just jumps down. And the reason she jumps down is, I don't think it's because there was a net there. I think it's because she believed and had faith that her brother and her sister were going to be there, right there with her, and they were going to catch her. And they're going to make sure that she was safe. And actually, after she jumps down, what I really like about this is it says, Sunny landed on the net, and with a slightly smaller thump, the coil of the rope landed, the rope that she went to get to save them, next to her. After making sure her sister was unharmed by the fall, Violet began tying one end of their rope to one of the pegs, holding the net in place. I love that about Violet, what she does right there. First of all, Sunny puts faith in her brother and sister and jumps, makes the leap into a black hole where she sees nothing. But then once she falls, once she makes that faith leap, Violet's right there, and the first thing she does is make sure that Sunny's okay. She checks on Sunny. A lot of us have made that leap of faith. Some of us haven't. And I can tell you that when I made that leap of faith, I felt God right there checking to make sure that I was okay. And not only did he stay right there, he's been with me there ever since. And he's making sure I'm okay every single day. Some of you might be working on getting to that point of making that leap of faith as Sunny did. Knowing that she can have faith in people. And maybe we need to start putting more of our faith in God and less in people. And once we do that, once we make that leap, once you decide to make that leap, once it's your choice, not anybody else's choice around you, once you make that leap of faith, I can guarantee you God is going to be right there with you, and he's going to be making sure and checking on you that you are okay. Actually, he's going to tell you before you ever even make the leap, you're going to be okay. And probably just to make you feel comfortable and put your mind at peace, he's going to make sure that you're okay after you make that leap. He's going to protect you from there on out. So let's read Romans 1, 16 and 17 again, since it's short and it's such a good passage of Scripture. And I'm going to tell you a little bit, give you some history on it. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith. As it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. So what's interesting about the book of Romans, and who knows who wrote the book of Romans? We talked about this in Sunday school. Good job. Paul wrote the book of Romans. So the city of Rome was probably probably around 4 million people. Does anybody know how many people are in Kansas City? How many? Million? Whew. That's a big city. How many? Bigger. How many? Say it again. 1.9 million. So about 2 million people in Kansas City nowadays, where technology is a lot better. In Rome at that time, there was 4 million people. So this was maybe 50 AD. 55 AD, somewhere in that time, 4 million people in one city. Now, in that city, there was over 420 different temples built to different gods and different idols that people worshipped in that city alone. The church at that time was very young. They might not even realize what they were being called, that they were the church. And most of the church was Gentiles. Does anybody know what a Gentile is? Can you help me explain it? What? So, basic explanation there is, a Gentile is someone who is not a Jew. A Jew is somebody that comes through the family line of Israel, and you see them come directly out of the Old Testament. It's the people that God has blessed. What Paul says in verses 16 and 17 is that the Jew first and also the Gentile. So what he does in these verses is open up the glory of God and the salvation of who Christ is to not just the Jew, but to everyone who's ever lived. And that includes every single one of us in here. But the church at that time in Rome was mainly Gentiles. There was very few Jews in the church at that time in Rome. So he's writing Romans. You have 4 million people. There's 420 different temples that are built to different gods. There's not just Paul writing letters to try to convince others of their faith. Clearly, with 420 different temples, I guarantee you there's other people out there writing other things about their gods, trying to get people to believe in what they have to say. So he's taking what he's trying to do is take the church and ground them in their faith and make them realize that they have to step into faith on their own and they have to not be ashamed of it. Because if you have 4 million people, there's 420 temples, there's 420 different gods that people are worshiping, how easy is it going to be tempted to run away from the one true God when one of your friends is saying, hey, why don't you try this out? Why don't you go try this out? This thing helped me, or this helped me. I made this to worship. How easy would that be? And in that time, they didn't even have what we have today in this. We have this so readily available. We can read it at any time. We can look it up on our phones. Most people probably didn't even know how to read back then. They didn't have the New Testament. It was still being written. A lot of it hadn't even been written at that time. So these people, what Paul is trying to do is solidify them in their faith. He's trying to help them put their big boy pants on. What's the next slide? Go to the next slide. So, sola fide is a term that's commonly connected to the book of Romans. And what it means is exactly what you read up there, justification by faith. So when we put our faith in God, we are justified. He makes us righteous. It's not anything that we do. We make the choice that we are going to follow him. And once we make that choice, he makes us righteous. So sola fide is a common phrase that you're going to see that goes right there with Romans, and it's justification by faith. And faith means giving ourselves up to something that we believe in so much that we're going to do whatever it is to make sure that we follow that the rest of our life. Just like what we were talking about earlier with people who are in wars, even how I was in that game, even how the Baudelaire children were with each other. How Sunny was when she jumped down into that elevator shaft. So with faith, there's a lot of different stories in the Bible that prove faith. So I want us to go to Daniel 4, if you have your Bibles. If you have your Bibles, thank you. Go to Daniel 4, Gavin. Go to Daniel 4. And we're going to read out of Daniel 3, 16 and 18, and also 28. So to set this up a little bit, you guys have you all heard of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? All right. So those are three contemporaries with Daniel, and they all have been taken into Babylon under the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. This is after Israel has been exiled because of the way they were living. This is the promise God made when he said, if you don't stop worshiping gods and idols, I'm going to remove you from the land that I promised to you. And he did. So now they are in this land. Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babylon, and he is telling them what to do. And Nebuchadnezzar, he's kind of, I would define him as schizophrenic. I really would. The guy is all over the place. He goes from understanding that Daniel and his compatriots are going to worship their God. You like that compatriots word? I saw you make a funny phrase. It means friends. I read that in, what are these books called? A Series of Unfortunate Events. It teaches you really great words. I knew compatriot, but it teaches you really great words. Nebuchadnezzar wants people to worship him and bow down to him. So let's read about what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego do and how their faith and their belief in who God is, they don't bow down. Starting in verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, Be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Let's read that again. But if it not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. And I think, I hope all of you have read Daniel, you guys have studied it at some point in time. What happens after that is that these three men, they are put into a fiery furnace. The people who actually put them into the fiery furnace, they are burned alive. But the three men that go in there, the fire does nothing to them. This fire is lit 6 times or 7 times hotter than Nebuchadnezzar normally does for something like this to make sure that these men will die because they will not worship him. But when they walk in, nothing happens to them. And what happens? What else happens when they walk in? What else do we see? He saw four men in there. A godlike figure is what it says. At no point in time were they ever going to bow down. And if you go to verse 28, this is what Nebuchadnezzar says after he sees that. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God." They yielded up their bodies. Jerome read from Acts 7 about Stephen. Stephen was a New Testament, what was around in the New Testament right when the church was beginning. He gave up his body for his faith. These three men gave up their bodies for their faith. They said, "I will die if I have to die for God, but I will not bow down to anything else." They put their big boy pants on big time. At that time, they might not have had pants. They might have put on a toga, or I don't really know what they wore back then. Maybe it was just a big blanket. They put that on, and they said, "I am not bowing down to anybody else, anything else, than the God who is the creator of the world, who is my God." And they would not serve anybody else besides him. And they see themselves come through. They see an angel of God protect them and guide them. When I was in college, my first year in college, I went to a small private Christian school down in Florida. Most of you guys know that. So did Jerome and Heather. SCU, go Fire, rock on. They have a really weird mascot now. What? They were Crusaders back then? Oh my gosh. I went there when they were the Fire. Cool. But one of the biggest things that I remember, and I have to remember this song, there was this very large worship guy. He was very large. He was big. He was black. He had the voice of an angel. I swear. I loved it. But he started singing, and this is what he started singing. "I'm not going back. I'm moving ahead. I am here to declare your glory. I'm moving forward." The best part about it, though, is when he started singing this song, every time my freshman year, he would sing this song. The guy wouldn't just stand there and sing, "I'm not going back, I'm moving." He wouldn't just stand there. He would say, "I'm not going back, I'm moving ahead." And the stage, I literally watched the stage bouncing up and down. The guy got into it. And the reason he got into it is because he said, "I'm owning up to my faith and I'm not going back. I'm moving ahead and I'm moving forward." How often in our lives do we want to go back? How often in our lives are we tempted to go back because of something else, because of somebody that's trying to pull us a different way, or the world is trying to pull us a different way, or maybe we're watching something on TV we shouldn't be watching. Maybe we're watching a movie. Maybe we're on Skype talking about things we shouldn't be talking about. Maybe we're looking at things on computers that we shouldn't be looking at, and we're pulling ourselves back and saying, "I'm not going back. I'm not taking my big boy pants off. I'm not going back to falling down. I'm not going back to giving up." Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they never were going to do anything besides walk into that fire. Stephen was never going to say anything else besides, "I'm going to worship God." He was never giving up. He said, "This is my faith. This is my God. The God who created everything, who created me, who gave me life." He was not ashamed. See, what we gather here for every Wednesday night, what we gather here for every Sunday morning, is because we are not ashamed of our faith. We're not ashamed to go into our schools, to go out into this world and not tell people about our faith. I want to go out there and I want to live my life unashamed. I want to own my faith. I want to go to work and I never want to let them hear me cuss. I never want to let them hear me take the Lord's name in vain. I never want to hear them let them hear me talk about anything that's sexual or perverted. I never want to let them hear that. I don't want to walk. I've done this for you guys before. If this is the edge of a cliff, even though I love adventure, I don't want to walk to the edge of the cliff of my faith. I want to get as far away from that edge, and I want to be back here where my faith is strong, where nothing can touch me. No wind can blow me off the side. I don't want to just have it for a moment. I don't want to just let somebody swing for one moment. I want this the rest of my life, and I desire this for every single one of you. And Jerome and Heather and all the leaders in here, they desire this for every single one of you. That's why they sacrifice their time. That's why we come, we teach on Sunday mornings. We want you to grow in the Word of God, grow in what it is that God has for you. Because if we can't own it inside of our hearts, how are we ever going to own it to anybody else? How are we ever going to go out into this world and tell people about our faith if we don't own it first in here? We've talked about this several times since I've came back. 10 years ago, I gave my heart to the Lord right over in that area. It's a good area. There was times, I can tell you, where I didn't have my big boy pants on. There was times where I fell flat on my face. And you know what? I'm still falling. Sometimes I still trip. But over this last year, I didn't know any of you when I came in. Over this last year, I've been able to fall. I've been able to grab onto you guys. Because you've been there and you've been owning your faith. And I'm asking you, we're asking you tonight to step further and deeper into that faith. If the band could come up. Our faith, it depends on making that decision. It depends on making that leap. And our faith will never be justified by the works that we do. It's already justified by Him. He has already made each and every single one of us righteous. I asked the band if they could play "Oh Come to the Altar" this week. And I want us to come to the altar in our hearts because we want to step into our big boy pants. We want to step into our faith. We want to own our faith. We want to be like that guy, not be ashamed to stand up in front of thousands of people and run across the stage and say, "I'm not going back." There's going to be things that are swinging at you in life. But I'm telling you, if you stand solid in your faith, those things that are swinging at you, they're never going to hit you because God's going to be there protecting you. If you own up to what it is that God has for you, to own up to your faith, not letting anybody else define it for you, not letting any other book besides the book of God define it for you, your life is going to start to change. Is that not what we are here for? I always tell myself, and I heard this, consistency in Christ brings change in life. Setting our feet firm in who God is and trusting that nothing in life is going to come against us. Nothing is going to ever hit us. Nothing's ever going to bring us down because we've stepped into our faith. We stepped into what it is that God has for us. And we're not just taking this. We're not just gaining knowledge. We're taking it, we're gaining knowledge, we're applying it to our life. We're applying it to the words we say. We're applying it to the actions that we take. We're applying it to how we treat our parents, how we treat others, how we treat our friends, how we talk to people online, how we talk to people through text. In everything we do, we take this knowledge that we have. We own up to it. And we live it. We pull our big boy or our big girl pants all the way up. We put a belt on. We super glue that belt on. We lock that belt on. We do whatever we can to make sure those pants don't ever come down. Because y'all know what happens whenever your pants come down. You look like a fool. Nobody wants you looking like a fool. So let's all stand. We're going to sing this song, "Oh Come to the Altar." This altar is always open to every single person in this room. This altar, if it wasn't open, I probably never would have walked up. Jerome made sure this altar was open 10 years ago when I decided to follow after Christ. This altar is always open. If you want to come to this altar tonight and say, I want to step into my big boy or big girl pants, I want to own this thing called faith, I want to own my relationship with God, you can do that up here. If you're not comfortable doing that, do it in your seat. This is an opportunity right now. This is an opportunity for me to step deeper into my faith, to put my big boy pants on stronger. But this is an opportunity for every single one of you to step away from the sin that maybe you're caught up in, or maybe you're caught up in not wanting to make that leap. This is that opportunity to make that leap. If you want to find a leader, if you want to find somewhere in here to pray, do that. Come to the altar of faith in your heart. Let God take hold of your life. Once you make that leap, He's going to be there, He's going to check you, and then He's going to walk with you through the rest of your life. He's going to put people in your life so whenever you fall, they're going to grab onto you and make sure you don't fall all the way. Or if you fall down to your face, He's going to lift you back up. This is your time, this is your opportunity, and this is your moment.